Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 332, titled B as in Bush, B as in Borman, B as in von Bolsthing. This is being recorded on October 21st of the year 2001. It is yet another program dealing with the subject of the terrible events of September 11th, 2001. Due to the limitations of time, I will not be able to detail the supplemental discussion to the extent that might be satisfactory or requisite for some listeners. I can only ask their indulgence. It's a huge event, and we're limited in terms of time. I would ask listeners who want to learn more about this to either contact Spitfire, a CD and tape duplication service I will tell you about later in the broadcast, and or to contact or to utilize the web and use the growing body of information that is available either streaming and or for download by sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey. I have, to sum up some of what I've spoken about in the past, I believe that the executive authority in the events of September 11th was what I call the Underground Reich. That may seem crazy to some people. It is literally a Third Reich gone underground, capitalized by the enormous economic resources of the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, headed up by Hitler's deputy, Martin Bormann. I believe at an intelligence operational level, it was executed by an underground Reich intelligence milieu, stretching back to World War II and embracing the Nazi intelligence outfit that we incorporated at the end of the war, and connected with that some of the Islamic extremist elements that we utilized in the Afghan war, and one of the connecting links being the World Muslim Congress that we've spoken about in, for the record, 328, 329, and 330. We may touch on that later. At an economic level, one can look at the connections between the Bormann organization, the Bush family, which was heavily involved with the capitalization of the Third Reich, as we saw in, among other programs, for the record, 248 and also number 186. We've also looked at the strong connections between King Ibn Saud, the founding monarch of Saudi Arabia, and Mohammed bin Laden, Osama bin Laden's father, who married one of his daughters off to King Ibn Saud. We've also taken a look at the links between the Bush family and the bin Laden family. Both Georges Bush have business connections to the bin Laden family, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record program number 248, For the Record program number 315, 325, and most recently number 329. What we're going to be looking at in this broadcast are some of the historical links between King Ibn Saud and the Third Reich, Alan Dulles, who was connected with all of these elements and who also handled some of the Bush family finances on behalf of the Third Reich. And we're going to take a look at Otto von Bolsthing, a key Third Reich intelligence operative, one of the principal figures in charge of the Nazi, quote, final solution, unquote, toward the Jews, and also a primary operative in the Middle East in the pre-World War II and World War II periods. After the war, von Bolsthing went to work for U.S. intelligence. He also had as one of his proteges a woman named Helena von Dahm, who, among other tasks, has held the position of special White House executive for presidential personnel, drew up the lists from which Ronald Reagan's cabinet appointments were made. And the von Dahm, von Bolsthing connection is one of the hard political connections between the milieu of the Bush family and the Bush administration and the Underground Reich. If one looks at the professional resumes of many of the people in George W.'s administration, one will find that they go back to the Reagan administrations and the George H.W. Bush administration. What we're going to do now is to detail a gambit that was put together by Jack Filby, the British fascist connected to Ibn Saud and to Alan Dulles, and, as we will see, to Otto von Bolsthing. It was put together in combination with von Bolsthing and Ibn Saud. It was a plan to lure the Zionist forces and the British into backing Jewish emigration to Palestine, and in turn leaking that to the Arabs and using that as a propaganda vehicle in order to incense the Arabs, and Saudi Arabia in particular, against not only the Jews, whom they already hated, but also the British, in order to secure the Middle Eastern oil reserves for the Third Reich. In an operational sense, one could perhaps think of Al-Qaeda as Africa Corps II, an underground Reich, Middle Eastern or Islamo-fascist entity that is intended to not only annihilate Israel, but also to ultimately secure the Middle Eastern oil supplies for elements other than the United States and Britain, basically to drive us out of that part of the world. What we're going to do now is to turn to a book called The Secret War Against the Jews, co-authored by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens. This book was published in hardcover by the St. Martin's Press, copyright 1994. It is a lavishly documented book. John Loftus, a former career military officer and Justice Department official with a high security clearance, got power of attorney for a group of veteran British intelligence, British American and former Soviet intelligence agents, and actually got reprint rights or printing rights from the CIA on condition of anonymity. The anonymity for the old spies, as Loftus and Ahrens call them. This book basically has the imprimatur of what might be called a good guy element, an anti-fascist element within the CIA, and is all the more important for that. Of the conspiracy between Otto von Bolsving, rather, and Alan Dulles, King Ibn Saud, and Jack Philby to portray the British as importing Jews into Palestine in order to discredit the Jews and inflame the Arabs further against the Jews and the British, and also to secure the Middle Eastern oil supplies for the Germans, we read as follows. Now, bear in mind the name of Haji Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, the founder of the World Muslim Congress, which was funded by the Saudi government and the Saudi royal family and was one of the principal elements in the Afghan support effort, which saw the genesis of Osama bin Laden and also Ramzi Youssef as warriors, these people from the World Trade Center attack 1 and 2. Turning to The Secret War Against the Jews by Loftus and Ahrens. Adolf Eichmann was replaced on the Middle Eastern scene by a far more skilled intelligence officer, Otto von Bolsving. Before World War II, von Bolsving set up an import-export business in Palestine as a cover for his espionage activities. He was an educated man from a good family and an enthusiastic supporter of Hitler. After the war, von Bolsving became one of Alan Dulles' senior agents in the CIA. The Dulles connection, of course, going to Bush as well as to von Bolsving and Jack Philby and Ibn Saud. Continuing, Alan Dulles helped von Bolsving emigrate to California, where he established a business association with Helena von Damm, later Ronald Reagan's ambassador to Austria. More importantly, she was the person who drew up the lists from which Ronald Reagan's cabinet appointments were made. Essentially, in my opinion, the Reagan administrations and later the first George Bush administration and the George W. Bush administration are fronts for the underground Reich, the von Bolsving-von Damm connection being pivotal. Continuing with the description of von Bolsving. In latter years, his business went bankrupt and he was forced to surrender his American citizenship on the grounds that he was a Nazi war criminal. He was just the sort of fellow to get along well with Jack Philby. He hated Jews. In the 1930s, Otto von Bolsving was a realist. He knew full well that the Muslim bigots would never accept even a token immigration of Jews to Palestine. Philby agreed. After more than a decade of anti-Zionist propaganda, quietly supervised by the British Secret Service, the climate was hardly receptive toward a homeland for the Jews in the Middle East. Still, there was profit to be made in the attempt. In any future war, von Bolsving said the support of the Muslim world was essential to Hitler's plans. Not to mention that Philby and Ibn Saud could make a healthy profit by secretly ensuring Germany's supply of oil. Hitler would guarantee that the Muslims received favored status. Indeed, they latter had their own SS division raised ironically from among the Bosnian Muslim population subjected to ethnic cleansing by the Serbs and Croats 50 years later. The SS division was personally blessed by Philby's old friend, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and, repeating, The founder of the World Muslim Congress, one of the principal elements in the Afghan war support effort in the 1980s, one of the principal links between the events of September 11th and this underground Reich milieu that I'm talking about stretching back decades to the pre-World War II period. Bear in mind that some of the al-Qaeda activities appear to be centered in Bosnia-Herzegovina. The president of that, Ali Izzet Begovic, was a member of this Waffen-SS division, the 13th, as we talked about in side one of For the Record program number 330, among others. Continuing of the 13th Waffen-SS division, this Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS division, founded by the Grand Mufti himself, a major in the SS. The SS division was personally blessed by Philby's old friend, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. The Mufti had been Hitler's honored guest and was even taken on guided tours of the Nazi death camps. Hitler promised that when Germany won the war, he would guarantee that the Arab states would be free of British colonial domination. They would be independent states and full allies with the Third Reich. All of Philby's dreams would come to pass. All that was needed was a little push. Von Bolschwing's proposition was simple. Philby should encourage British support for Zionist emigration schemes, penetrate the secret negotiations, and then leak them to the press with the certain knowledge of the popular discontent that would result among Muslims. The Arab backlash to a new British Zionist initiative might not drive the region into the arms of the Third Reich, but it would certainly keep the oil-producing Arabs, quote, neutral, unquote, but actually tilting toward the Nazis. Parenthetically, I would interject, just imagine a similar geopolitical stratagem, except projected forward into the contemporary period, and instead of alienating the Islamic world in the Middle East toward Britain, think about alienating it toward the United States. Continuing. It was no secret that Ibn Saud had more than a little sympathy for the German position on the Zionist issue. His extreme anti-Jewish feelings were made clear to a British diplomat in 1937. The king said his, quote, hatred for the Jews, unquote, stemmed from their persecution and rejection, unquote, of Christ and, again quoting, their subsequent rejection of Muhammad. Ibn Saud added that for a Muslim to kill a Jew in war or for him to be killed by a Jew ensures him an immediate entry into heaven and into the august presence of God Almighty. Unquote. Sounds rather like Mohammed bin Laden and what his followers are saying, and that is no accident, as I've tried to indicate. Continuing. According to several of our sources, this was one of the aspects of Islam that most appealed to Philby. He had all sorts of schemes that could aid the Nazis, who meant business when it came to the Jews. Our sources say Jack obtained the king's permission to become a double agent for the Third Reich, publicly helping the Jews, privately aiding the Nazis, always making a profit for the House of Saud, and, naturally, himself. The scheme appealed to Philby's clandestine nature, and the more he worked to link Britain and Zionism publicly, the more damage he could do to the empire's position in the Middle East. And take a look at some of the right-wing as well as Islamic fundamentalist propaganda linking the United States and Zionism today. And again, I don't believe that this is a coincidence. Continuing. A great deal of circumstantial evidence supports this version of Philby as an anti-Zionist double agent given to us by the old spies. Those are the veteran intelligence operatives that I alluded to earlier. Loftus has power of attorney for them. Continuing. For more than a decade, Philby had opposed any scheme to increase Jewish emigration. Suddenly, in 1937, he opened extensive negotiations with the Zionist leader David Ben-Gurion about a plan to allow unlimited Jewish immigration into a greater Palestine under Ibn Saud's protection. Shortly thereafter, he went a lot further to, quote, help, unquote, the Zionist cause. In July of that year, the Arab world was horrified at Philby's support of the Peel Report in which Britain proposed to partition Palestine. Philby even turned his well-honed propaganda skills to the partition cause in a series of newspaper articles. This caused Ibn Saud a lot of trouble at court, and he had to repudiate Philby's views publicly. In fact, the king and Jack were playing a nasty little game with the Jews. Despite their, quote, disagreement, unquote, over the partition plan, in early 1939, Ibn Saud sent Philby to London to be on hand for the Palestine Roundtable Conference. It does seem rather strange that the king would send someone whose views conflicted so clearly with his own. Apparently, Philby's true mission was sabotage. In order to set all sides against each other, Philby developed his own plan on the Palestine question, which he put to British officials as well as to the Jews and Arabs. In February 1939, he had a secret lunch with Ezer Weizmann and Ben-Gurion and introduced the Zionist leaders to Fawad Hamza, H-A-M-Z-A, Ibn Saud's longtime foreign affairs official. Philby offered the Zionists substantial Jewish immigration into Palestine if they would support the country coming under Saudi domination. Weizmann was blamed when this, quote, secret, unquote, plan was leaked to the press, and there was no further progress. As will be seen, all of Philby's schemes with the Zionists had a suspicious habit of coming to nothing. There is a definite pattern of sabotage, with the Zionists as fall guys, unquote, every time. Amazingly, the Zionists stuck by Philby for nearly five critical years while he treated the game as an auction. And, skipping down of this operation, Jack's operation had been a triumph. From von Bolschming's point of view in Berlin, it was also a huge success. The Nazis had a field day spreading propaganda in the Middle East that the war was being fought at the instigation of the Jews to provide themselves with a homeland at the expense of the Arabs. The net result of Philby's pretense at pro-Zionism was a major backlash against Britain and the Jews in the Arab world. And by the way, I think this is not unlike what's going on with the United States and Israel today, and not only Nazi and right-wing propaganda, but also in the Islamic fundamentalist propaganda of Al-Qaeda and related elements. And skipping down, what we're going to look at next is a gambit in which Jack Philby and the Third Reich and Ibn Saud and Alan Dulles worked out a scheme to ship oil from Saudi Arabia to the Third Reich through, quote, neutral Spain, unquote, which is actually a fascist country that was whose fascist dictator, Francisco Franco, was aided by Nazi Germany and fascist Italy. Speaking of this gambit, which we spoke about in For the Record 216, speaking of Philby, the author's right, skipping down, he led the secret negotiations on his favorite subject, Ibn Saud's oil. A number of our sources say that Philby was also drawn to the Nazis for profit. Having sabotaged the Zionist negotiations, he and the Saudis now wanted something from the Germans, money. During the late 1930s, Philby held a series of secret talks with the Germans on behalf of the Saudi government. The discussions, which took place largely in Spain, were designed to ensure that Nazi Germany would have sufficient supplies of oil in the event of war. Even if a worldwide embargo was imposed, the oil would be shipped from, quote, neutral, unquote, Saudi Arabia to, quote, neutral, unquote, Spain. The fascist dictator of Spain, General Francisco Franco, was offered a cut for each transshipment with payments through the Bank of Spain. As Franco was then dependent on Germany's help during the closing stages of the Spanish Civil War, he was more than glad to participate in the negotiations. And, skipping ahead, more about the dealings between Jack Philby, Ibn Saud, the Third Reich, and, we're going to look at another element here, American oil companies, specifically Texaco, and also SoCal, the research, exploration branch of Standard Oil of California, now known as Chevron. Skipping down in the secret war against the Jews, to put it simply, in 1940 there was a three-way deal. Jack Philby represented the Saudi sellers of oil. Alan Dulles represented the Nazi buyers, such as I.G. Farben, while John Foster Dulles represented the German bankers and Spanish financiers. Of course, Alan Dulles was also representing the Bush family at this time. I.G. Farben, as we've seen in Miscellaneous Archive Show M11, Uncle Sam and the Swastika, and as we're going to review here, had prominent stock holdings in the Standard Companies. Resuming with this last sentence, to put it simply, in 1940 there was a three-way deal. Jack Philby represented the Saudi sellers of oil, Alan Dulles represented the Nazi buyers such as I.G. Farben, while John Foster Dulles represented the German bankers and Spanish financiers. On paper, the Texas Oil Company, or Texaco, was the principal supplier of Franco's oil during the Spanish Civil War. In addition, Texaco had become partners with SoCal, which controlled Saudi oil through Jack Philby. The result of this union was Caltex, which was largely the making of James Forrestal. As will be seen in Chapter 7, Forrestal served as Secretary of the Navy and later U.S. Defense Secretary. He played a key role in shaping U.S. oil policy after the war until paranoid anti-Semitism brought about his premature demise as a political leader. In the 1930s, Forrestal was head of the New York investment bank Dillon Reed. He was an ally of the Dulles brothers and a member of the Wall Street financial mafia. In early 1936, Forrestal brought SoCal and Texaco together and, with the help of Dillon Reed Vice President Paul Meatze, drew up the scheme to pool the assets of the two companies east of Suez. Paul Meatze, by the way, recruited by the elder George Bush when he was director of CIA to draw up a plan which greatly exaggerated the Soviet threat and led to the subsequent Reagan policies that we've spoken about in For the Record 214. Continuing. The result was that after 1940, when the deal was formalized, Caltex became the parent company of Aramco, the Arabian American Oil Company, skipping down. They also had a common shareholder, IG Farben. The Dulles brothers' client, Hermann Schmitz, president of American IG, owned stock in both SoCal and Standard of New Jersey. American IG later changed its name to General Anilin and Film, GAF, and Forrestal was recruited to the board of the new front company. In fact, GAF stock in SoCal and Standard was effectively controlled by its parent company, IG Farben. When the dust settled on the complex web of paperwork, Dulles' Nazi client, IG Farben, had Forrestal on its payroll, while Forrestal's American client, Caltex, had the Saudi oil. The man who held the deal together on the ground was Jack Philby. Through his client, Ibn Saud, a cozy deal could be done to get the Third Reich's hands on Saudi Arabian oil and make lots of money for Dulles' and Forrestal's clients. Ibn Saud was in turn secretly in partnership with the Nazis, who financed his clandestine war against the Zionists in Palestine. Skipping down again. According to sources on both sides of the Atlantic, it was Philby who advised Ibn Saud energetically to court Nazi Germany in the months before the war. The relationship was mutually beneficial. As one U.S. intelligence study found, the Nazis, quote, recognized that King Ibn Saud's help was essential for renewing the fight against the British and the Jews in Palestine, unquote. The Germans proposed that a new government should be formed in Palestine under the control of Jack's old friend, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Further, quote, Jews who had settled in Palestine after the First World War would not be allowed to remain, unquote. In January 1939, Saudi Arabia established diplomatic relations with the Third Reich, and Ibn Saud confided to the Germans that at heart he, quote, hated the English, unquote. In the following months, he concluded arms deals with Germany and signed a friendship and trade treaty with Japan. Philby was pleased, especially as Ibn Saud concealed his secret dealings with the Axis from both the British and Americans. The Nazis also were pleased with the progress they had made with the king. They sent their best Middle East agent, Fritz Graba, G-R-O-B-B-A, to meet with Ibn Saud and even promised to obtain for him the most prestigious position in the Muslim world, the Caliphate. The Saudi Third Reich connection flourished, with their main link being their mutual hatred for the Jews. The Nazis even promised to supply Ibn Saud with weapons, ammunition, and an armaments factory, and, according to some accounts, gave him bribes during most of World War II. Skipping down again, 2 years after the Nazis had begun their secret bribes to Ibn Saud, the same shakedown, basically, seeing to it that the British would not expose the IG American oil connections, otherwise their oil would be cut off. 2 years after the Nazis had begun their secret bribes to Ibn Saud, the same shakedown was used on the Americans. In June of 1941, just 6 months before the Americans entered the war, one of Ibn Saud's American front men, James Moffat of Caltex, went to President Roosevelt for a bribe. To guarantee that Saudi Arabia's oil would not fall into enemy hands, the American government had to hand over $6 million a year to Ibn Saud. So again, note the role of Otto von Bolschwing working with British fascist Jack Philby and Alan Dulles, and King Ibn Saud in order to discredit the British in among the Muslim population of the Middle East by hoodwinking them into appearing to be an agent of Jewish emigration into that part of the world. We're going to talk about Otto von Bolsching in the second half of the program. But again, remember that Alan Dulles was handling many of the cloaking operations for the Bush family's investments in Nazi Germany that we've spoken about in, among other programs, For the Record 273, B as in Bush, B as in Borman. Bear in mind that King Ibn Saud was married to one of Mohammed bin Laden's daughters, Mohammed being Osama's father and the founder of the bin Laden Construction Company. Bear in mind that through James R. Bath, the North American business representative for the bin Laden family, there are connections between the bin Laden family and George W. Bush's first oil company, Arbusto. Bear in mind also that through the Carlyle Group, capitalized in part by the bin Laden family, there are also strong connections between the bin Laden family and the elder George Bush. And through the Carlyle Group, as we looked at in 284, the record 284, the elder George Bush was in touch with the Saudi royal family during the 2000 election campaign. Bear in mind, too, that one of Osama bin Laden's daughters is married to Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban. And bear in mind that the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Amin al-Husseini, a major in the SS, was one of the principal associates of von Bolsching and King Ibn Saud in the Middle East. He was very closely allied with the Third Reich, having recruited the 13th Waffen-SS Division for the Third Reich. And bear in mind that the president of Bosnia was a member of that division as a young man, and that that Bosnia-Herzegovina, now an apparent European base for al-Qaeda. And bear in mind, too, that businessmen always protect their investments. And one very short fact, again, from the secret war against the Jews, talking about American investment in Nazi Germany. Nearly 70% of the money that flowed into Germany during the 1930s came from investors in the United States, many of them Sullivan and Cromwell clients. That's the Dulles law firm. And, of course, one of their clients was George Herbert Walker, George W.'s great-grandfather, and his son-in-law, Prescott Bush Sr., George W.'s grandfather. We're going to talk more about these connections on the other side. Bear in mind that the World Muslim Congress was funded by the Saudi government and the Saudi royal family, used an American neo-Nazi, William Grimstead, as its American representative, strong links to the Afghan support effort. I've alluded to other programs. Those are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. It's equipped with real audio, and there are links in the For the Record section to two websites run by sister station WFMU-FM. More recent For the Record programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, and there are links to a longer website that has other programs available for download only. That concludes Side A of For the Record program number 332. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.